We made it through. It's the final podcast of the season. We're going to be looking back at the 2013 Oscars. And yes, it's the 2013 Oscars held in March 2nd, 2014. The podcast will be back in April, but until then, here's the last episode. I'm a huge fan of all three of these people on my show today, as I have been for years. And so I want you to please welcome Creation Roach from Variety Fair.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
The wickedly talented Jalexander Dreeb from The Were.
Thank you.
And Nickelback Vadim from Nickelback's Flickin' Pickles.
Low hell.
Oh my God, that last one was too much.
So you're all gonna sing now, right?
Yes. Totally, and with a rushed orchestra.
Yeah.
Did
Are
you
you
see?
guys mad about that still?
No winner or loser at the Oscars made me more depressed than that, I have to say. That bummed me out so hard.
The performance? Yeah.
She
Performance,
yeah.
also looked furious, so she shares your anger.
Well, there was like 20 different things going wrong in that whole thing, right? Like, part of it was her, part of it was she was thrown off, part of it was the orchestra was both too loud and too fast. And the cutting of the middle verse of a song like that is so disastrous because it's like it's a song that builds. And so already you're sort of going from like 0 to 60, from like verse 1 to verse 2 to chorus to whatever. I don't know. And it was like, I was so looking forward to that, even though I had that thing in the back of my mind being like, remember at the Tonys, remember she wasn't really good at the Tonys. So.
Well, I mean, her signature songs always have these like
They are.
impossible notes in them that if you're not like at the top of your game, you're gonna flub.
And yeah, you have to train for that for a while.
Seeing her on Fallon the next night or 2 nights later or whatever with the Roots and the classroom instruments made up for a lot of it. I thought that was fairly delightful and people should check
Totally
it out.
sweet.
Yeah, it was,
and she was great. She nailed the song.
I do think when you're doing the Oscars and you have to do like sort of a bastard version of the song, that you should maybe look at reinterpreting it a little rather than trying to, especially if it's a difficult song, because that was so fun what she did on Jimmy Fallon.
But then you'd have 6-year-old girls who have stayed up late for the first time in their lives crying because that's not Let It Go.
Yeah, that's
Well, they
true.
probably did that anyway because it sounded so
That's
weird and
probably true. Mommy, where's the second verse? This cuts significantly into, like, of course, I was hearing a little murmur to my right already by the show of, like, live theater performers can actually do things. I don't know why movie performers can't even read a teleprompter. There was a little bit of, like, But then I tried to use my maternal solicitude. I remember when Mariah fucked everything up at Michael Jackson's funeral. We've all been through hard moments. Fess up.
Well, at least those 6-year-old girls got to see The Wind Beneath My Wings, which was really the other thing they were staying up late to see.
And at
I
least
love
the gay
how.
boys in the world were like, oh my God, this whole show is for us. What's happening?
I love that the Bette's hand gestures are trying to create her own wings during that song.
And she was just smiling so broadly. She was so happy to think of the departed.
It is a weird song for The Departed.
It's really weird. It's very braggy. It's not like it's all about how these people made Bette Midler great, and she's so sorry she never appreciated them. It's
Well,
bizarre.
that's the thing, is because it gets conflated with Beaches, and Beaches is about somebody dying. So then people start to think that that's a song about somebody dying. And like that song was played at my grandma's funeral too. So like I get it. But also just like the actual interpretation of the lyrics isn't so much about somebody dying so much as like the thanking the little people, basically, right? So it's odd when you sort of take it out of context even a little bit.
Well, Peter O'Toole might have appeared to go unnoticed.
He was a
But I
major
had him all
influence
here
on
in
Bette
my
Midler's
heart.
career.
At least now the For the Boys nomination won't have to be the last thing we remember in the Bette Midler chapter.
That is true. I will say, Nick, you mentioned about it being like a gay boy's dream for the Oscars, which it like always is to some degree, but I feel like the years where it gets super, super gay, we didn't get as much of the next morning, like, oh God, it was just like, it was only for drag queens and 50-year-old gay men, like we do sometimes, some years. So I feel like the reaction is getting a little bit more progressive, perhaps. I don't know.
I think Adele Dazeem muted just about every other way to talk about the show.
And
why the selfie. And why do they even let John Travolta? I mean, he flubbed last time, too.
That was What is John Travolta doing?
He was like,
doing?
Les Miserables.
Oh, God.
Like, of all the, you have like a whole universe of celebrities who are relevant to pop culture right now to do, and John Travolta just keeps coming back.
Well, yeah.
And it's next to the Nyong'os. What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it should be extremely clear to everyone who watches the Oscars that the actual producers of the show are both completely aware of how lacking in current understanding of pop culture they are and completely desperate to show that they understand it. Yeah. At the same time, which creates these really uncomfortable things. Like, I know, you want to look at Kate Hudson right now. And we're like, no, that was 10 years ago.
No, but I kind of was happy to look at Kate Hudson again. I thought that was a weird sense of nostalgia. It was just sort of like, oh, Kate Hudson's still looking good. Like,
she looks spectacular.
Right, but she did. But I don't think that they thought of it as nostalgia. Like bringing back her and Jessica Biel, it just screams like 7 years ago.
Yeah, I guess so.
So it's like, if you really want to be in the now, which they seem so desperately to be, maybe they should have it. They do, kind of, because they, like, for example, like, you know, inviting Liza, but then she just gets to stand, and then you cut immediately to Kate Hudson and spend actually more camera time with Kate Hudson.
Okay, that but here's my question, and I sort of said this the night of. Do we think that's the producers not wanting Liza Minnelli to perform, or do we think that's Liza sort of being like, I don't want to perform?
Well, I mean, she clearly would never have performed that song, because she's, like, her whole career, she's adamant that she won't perform it.
So then my thing is, why is everybody getting so mad at the show for slighting Liza?
Well, because Ellen made that really mean joke about her, too. Like, that was kind of the way that they introduced Liza being there, and it felt really off tone.
I thought she was going to find that hilarious.
I did too. Actually.
That's like the oldest joke in the book, and she's all about the oldest jokes in the book.
Just like Lorna Luft. Sorry, that's me.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just think their choice of presenter shows that they don't quite get what they're always desperate to get. Like, I mean, even just like, and I realize they need household names, which is why they do things like Will Smith and stuff like that. But even he is, like, not in the peak of his career at this moment.
Yeah, but he also wasn't Jack Nicholson or Harrison Ford. Like, yes, that was kind of a nice...
Which was a relief, yes.
If Meryl's just going to sit there with her slippers on and eat pizza with her husband, which is awesome, like, that's just the street corner of the audience, then sure. Will Smith for Best Picture.
Well, the relevance thing is brings me to, like, one of the things I thought Ellen did really well, which was take advantage of having all of these very relevant stars who are sitting in the audience, who are not presenters, who are nominees, and actually get them to interact with each other, which is something that every year seems like a missed opportunity. And
right.
I mean, the pizza thing was gimmicky and, you know, maybe went on too long, but it got Brad Pitt giving Meryl Streep pizza, which is something that you kind of wish you would have the power to do when you see them sitting across the aisle from each other, and she actually managed to pull off. And that, I hope that becomes the thing that people imitate more so than the selfie, which I also enjoyed, but is, you know, kind of one of those lighting in a bottle things I don't think can be repeated. Yeah. But the pizza thing, I think, could be a model for the future.
Well, and this is why you get a host like Ellen, whose celebrities not only like, but trust.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because, like, I mean, Seth MacFarlane could have tried that last year, but it wouldn't have turned out that way.
People would have been terrified.
Yeah. Or just like Helen Hunt might have punched him in the nuts or something.
Oh, my God.
Which would have made great television.
That's true. That would have been even better television.
Yeah. So other than, like, Ellen's just general, like, charm, did you find any particular bit, you know, did any particular bit do it for you?
I thought her jokes were kind of a little riskier in the DeGeneres spectrum of things sometimes. Like, I thought the first June Squibb joke was hilarious. Talking loud to her and you know, 12 Years a Slave wins or we're all racist. Like, there were a few jokes that I thought were a little zingier than she usually gets off. But,
yeah,
you know.
I was kind of surprised that the next day reaction, there was a lot of, like, God, Ellen was mean. And I was like, well, isn't the knock on Ellen that she's too nice? And I felt like there was that edge to it was just the right amount of edge to make it interesting. I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too, but I also like that she still did her signature humor, which isn't really jokes so much as her sort of like saying odd rambling things. Like, one of my favorite parts was just her stupid little, I added a scarf, and just things like that when she would come back out with like different variations of the wardrobe.
Or when she came out and wasn't on her mark, and she was like, one of the most important things in film is, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, because I think that sort of like ha-ha humor that's not super funny, but is like fun,
right?
Is really good for award shows.
Yeah.
Because it keeps the mood very light.
Did you guys miss more jokes about the movies themselves? This is something that my colleague pointed out to me afterward. Really? Like, I was waiting for Ellen to, like, be in a spacesuit and, like, make a gravity joke. I mean, there were movies that, like, or, like, have one of the American Hustle wigs on. It just felt really strange that a lot of the jokes were kind of about the people, and then
disconnected from the film here.
And then the montages were all about, I mean, we can talk about the montages later, but the idea of celebrating the film year itself felt really disconnected from this year, and I missed that.
So how about presenters? Who was your favorite among the presenters? Who do you think should be invited back immediately?
I think Angelina's great at it. The whole having her with Sidney Poitier was weird because it felt like they were canonizing him. Like, it was a very weird level. It was a very weird level of attention to him. But I think Angelina's a really good presenter in general.
Well, that was like a 50th anniversary of his win, right?
Was it?
Yeah, Lilies of the Field. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes some sense. Like, fully articulated, but I think that was why.
I don't think that was articulated.
There was a lot of not fully articulated in the actual introductions of the presenters.
Yeah.
They were just sort of like, here they are, every time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think she's great. I thought Jim Carrey's Bruce Dern impression was amazing.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I wanted to come back and do it next year, maybe not.
Yeah.
He could imitate someone else with that rubber face.
Yeah.
I have to say, for as much as sort of I feel like we all collectively got sick of him for a long time, I think Kevin Spacey's riding this House of Cards thing wonderfully. And I thought that ad lib coming out after Darlene Love as a way to sort of riff on that without making light of it or making less of it, I thought was really good.
Mm-hmm. Was he there with a man?
I don't know. I've given up.
With a man.
I've given up looking for semantic clues with Kevin Spacey.
Well, it wasn't his mom, I can say that.
Okay.
My choice was also Angelina Jolie. I just thought it was like the perfect amount of sort of grace and understanding what her job was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was actually multitasking. Like, she had to be a presenter, but she also had to make sure Sidney Poitier was presented well.
Yeah.
Which she did a much better job of than sort of Matthew McConaughey did with Kim Novak.
I was going to give him credit for that, though, because that was a tricky situation.
Yes, it was.
Kind of navigated, I thought, pretty well, like, not allowing it to... Like, I think like he kind of took the focus off of her in a way that needed to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of female impersonators, like, if there isn't a drag queen on every corner with their Kim Novak impersonation now, like, they need to be. That was amazing. I loved her.
And how about favorite musical performance?
Pharrell, easy.
Yeah, that's an easy one for me, too.
Yeah,
well, I guess I'll throw in Darlene Love, too, because that was a super great moment, particularly that, like, noted grumpus Bill Murray was the one who led the standing ovation.
Yeah.
Noted that. Grumpus is
fantastic. Pink was amazing also.
Yeah, yes, I was going to say, if you remove the, and I would not want to, but if you remove the celebrity dancers from Happy, I would vote for Pink.
It's funny, Nick, you mentioned sitting on the couch next to a musical theater devotee. I had to deal with a whole room of people after the fact being like, well, you know, Pink was taking breaths in the middle of words. And I was like, I didn't know that was a thing. And also, I kind of don't care. Like, I'm kind of happy not to be an expert in that field in that regard, because it's like, I thought she was great. I thought she was wonderful.
Yeah. I'm being reminded that Pink has a really strong voice, because I feel like her music it's not really about that, like what makes the songs big, so good for her.
Mm-hmm. And My Show Queen is all about her also.
Your what? I'm sorry?
My Show Queen was all about her as well. He gave her an A+.
Good for Pink.
Um, So, okay, I know we've mentioned the selfie a few times, but it is sort of like the signature moment from this show. And I think it was intended to be, so good job for Ellen there.
Good job for Samsung, too, I guess.
Yeah, so, but it's interesting because, you know, snapshot, and it is a snapshot of history, as the Oscars are always meant to be, in a way. But then you also have this tricky thing where Oscars are also trying to always archive their own history by, like, these sort of vague salutes to the past, like Kim Novak, here she is for some reason, and then like their horrible montages, which every year seem to be so random. So I was wondering if you guys had any strong feelings about the way Oscar presents itself in terms of this will be history.
The selfie is going to look dumb and you know, who knows how long, but it did a really good job, as you were saying, of like being exactly what you would want those people to do right now. Like, taking advantage of this moment of technology and all of these celebrities who are, you know, these varying levels of fame right now, and kind of putting them out there, which I really enjoyed. It's something that, like, we'll be able to access for, I mean,
who knows what, Twitter. Well, it's why I'm obsessed with looking at old photos of that the four acting winners with their trophies. Like, it's that kind of thing. Or it's even looking at, like, the luncheon giant photo. And mm-hmm. So I feel like in that regard, you know, we'll always have the selfie, as dumb as that sounds. as far as, like, the montages, and I feel like we talk about this every year, that we wish the montages were more about this year as, like, a yearbook entry. Mm-hmm. And I still don't understand, like, you have all those people there for the luncheon, which gives you plenty of time to, like, I never understand why they don't just film little interviews with the major players. Have them talk about what they liked in movies this year, and then use those for the montages. And, you know, then you have clips of what was, and it don't necessarily limit it to what was nominated this year. And
Or even ask them, you know, their formative movie experiences. Exactly. And that way you can put history in there too.
Yeah. And then you have history and what, you know, who was really important in the current year. And I think those would be much better than, like, the 80th time that we see the clip of Norma Rae holding up the union sign in the middle of, you know, The Best Years of Our Lives and The Godfather 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because that, especially that last Heroes montage was just bizarrely disorganized.
The one with, like, that was, like, movies with protagonists?
Yeah.
It was so weird!
Yeah.
Oh, and then, like, there wasn't a woman in it for, like, 10 minutes. And you're like, what the hell is happening?
And then she was inside a spacesuit and you couldn't see her face. I remember that scene. That's her. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Katie, sorry. I want to talk about Batkid, too, and how secretly fantastic it was that didn't happen. Because, like, how awkward and terrible a moment would that have been?
Oh, I'm sure it was so awkward and terrible in the rehearsal that, like, they just couldn't go through with it. And to be clear, like, I don't think that kid is awkward or terrible or Andrew Garfield, but this kid is a 5-year-old who is not an actor, who doesn't, like, there's no reason for him to be at the Oscars. It doesn't make any sense. And they cut it, which I think was smart, and then we all forgot that the theme of the show was Heroes, which is good, because who cares anyway? Mm-hmm. And the Batkid got to go to Disneyland, which I'm sure he enjoyed way more than he would have enjoyed being in the Oscars.
I feel like they ended up cutting a few things that they had publicized ahead of time. I remember when Harold Ramis died, I was like, oh, right, they said they're going to do something about Ghostbusters at the Oscars anyway.
Did they really?
They had said that ahead of time, that they said that you know, one of the Heroes presentations was going to include Ghostbusters for some reason. And I don't know whether that got cut because of, you know, tone concerns, mm-hmm. Or that was another thing that just sort of, like, didn't feel like it worked right in rehearsal or something like that. But I think that is also the danger of this sort of endless publicity machine that has to be fed throughout Oscar season, that they have to sort of, you know, leave out these breadcrumbs of, you know, mm-hmm. what's going to happen in the ceremony. And then when it doesn't happen, then all of a sudden people like me are just like, wait a second, where was that brand new superhero dumb thing that was supposed to happen and didn't?
And also, like, I could have sworn there was a commercial saying that Scarlett Johansson was going to be there, which surprised me because she wasn't on the presenters list.
Well, and then she could have sung with Karen O.
Sure.
That would have been nice.
Yeah.
This is now my quest now, that Scarlett Johansson for 2 years in a row has had best song nominees that she has sung within the movie.
Yes.
And hasn't performed. Like, God damn it. make this happen. Not that Karen O wasn't fantastic, because she was.
Mm-hmm. And I that would have been an interesting duet for sure, though.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it would have been really nice. Because otherwise, the Moon Song was, I mean, it was nice, but it was kind of like a weird tonal shift within this big Oscar show. So that could have been like a spectacle to add to it.
And yeah, and if they did Zac Efron introduced that, because what?
Well, and if they had done that, it could have been sort of like a de facto subtextual honor to Blue is the Warmest Color.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which they seem incredibly interested in honoring. They were trying to find exactly. Hell or High Water.
Anybody else have any strong themes, strong ideas about how they could honor history better than just like, here's the Wizard of Oz, which I, you know, worship, but it's just one movie, so it's a little weird to be like, here's a tribute to Wizard of Oz.
It's one movie, but it's also one, like, it's the most popular, well-known across the board. Like, it's a standout movie. You know what I mean? They're going to honor one. That at least makes some sense.
I applaud them for deciding not to honor Gone with the Wind, which was also a 1939 movie, and that would have just been a tonal disaster, so some restraint there.
And, like, Lord knows it would piss off the people who already think the ceremony is too long, which I feel like we've talked about those people plenty across the years, and I'd like to congratulate them on watching their first Academy Awards this year. But I do remember being fascinated by those years when they were like, every living Oscar nominee on a set of bleachers.
And oh, yeah.
I remember that Titanic year when they brought out everybody, and it was really, for me,
wasn't
like,
even Louise Rainer there that year?
Yeah.
It's majestic, honestly, and it was really something. And that was when I sort of like realized a lot of things about myself maybe that night. But no, I was already pissed. But I don't like it would drive people absolutely up the wall in the age of Twitter, and there would be no end to the complaining. But like, I love that kind of thing.
Well, I do too. Like, I just think that they need to come up with ways to honor their history without it just being so random.
Yeah.
Because montages just don't really do it for anyone. Like, you know, there are a lot of people who complain about this and that of the Oscars, and we're always like, oh, just suck it up and enjoy the show.
Yeah.
But I have. Even people who love the show don't seem to ever love the montages.
I like the idea of the montages. I feel like they always just could be executed better.
And I think that book, The Big Show, sort of walked me through an explanation that the studios basically pay for this broadcast and require the montages as kind of free advertising of their own back catalogs.
That makes sense.
And that the total economic infrastructure of the show, which the producers also find burdensome, is based on you have to show a certain amount of old movie footage.
Oh. Mm. But, right.
I mean, that's interesting. That also. Like, there are other ways that studios surely could sell what they have to sell. But, yeah. But then it's hard because, like, to show random footage from old movies that people don't know, they feel like they won't respond to, and so you do get Norma Rae for the millionth time. But
right. Yeah.
There was during that Random Heroes montage, someone, I think it might have been John Hodgman, but tweeted, like, if you were, say, a very large star in a very large hit movie, would you not allow your participation in this montage unless they included footage of your kid in the Karate Kid remake?
Oh, and God.
I was like, oh, my God, that exactly explains why Jaden Smith is in there.
Yeah, that was just... It was so weird. And, like, even the animated montage was so weird because it was, like, non-nominees.
Yeah.
And then it took forever to get to the sort of, like, the Disney classics. The 2D, yeah. The 2D, the traditionals that we don't want to think about anymore.
Yeah, there was a lot of Shrek before we got to Dumbo.
Yeah, but even a lot of... I mean, Shrek is one thing, but even a lot of things that weren't nominated.
Yeah.
And then just... And not even a lot of, like, the huge classics, you know. Was there Sleeping Beauty in there at all?
I don't remember.
And, I mean, I remember Cinderella was there for, like, a split second.
You should just start scouring Vimeo to hire new montage makers for them. Right? There's so many good montages on the internet.
They could have let those six little fetuses who won the prize or whatever to be up on the stage as the filmmakers of tomorrow. They could do the montages.
That was super weird, too.
Okay, so there were a lot of standing ovations on Sunday.
Yes. Yeah.
So you each have three to three people that you, or three things, people, whatever, that you want to stand up and cheer for. Use them wisely.
Lubezki. Mm-hmm. Blanchett. Happy. Those were not in chronological order of the show. But, like, Happy was just so exuberant and great, and the whole mood in the room felt so awesome that there's no way I wouldn't have played one card right then. And then I was waiting for Lubezki all night. And then it seems like bad planning ahead not to save one for Best Picture, since it seemed likely to go to 12 Years a Slave. But then if it hadn't been 12 Years a Slave, even though I love Gravity, would I have wanted to stand up for it? Maybe not. And after Kate's, like, you know, world is round moment, which I just fucking loved, of course, predictably, absolutely. I would have stood up right then in the middle of the speech. Although then maybe that would have cut into her time. So maybe on her way out.
Yes, because you know the camera would have been on you.
Well,
no, I just mean that she, you know, they always seem aware of, like, oh, don't clap too much while I'm talking, because then I won't get to thank my kids.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't play people off this year, so you might
have. That was awesome.
That was great.
Totally awesome.
But can we talk for a second about people not liking Blanchett's speech?
I didn't know there were such people, and I don't want to know that there are such
people. There are such people in our midst, and good people, but, like, whew, I could not disagree more. I thought that was a wonderful speech. I thought once she got past that Globe speech that was fairly rote, I thought everything she did this award season was kind of fantastic.
Yeah. And she was really, like, people were teeing her up for disaster. And I don't think she ever would have, like, stepped into the pit people thought she was going to. But, like, under that kind of pressure that she did so well, she just, she's a superhero.
And then, like, shouting out Greta Gerwig at the Spirit Awards, like, I could have absolutely hugged her at that. Yeah. It was great.
Well, we always love those moments because we love movies where you can tell the actors actually like movies.
And, like, their fellow actors.
Yeah, like the Meryl Streep's whole thing with Pariah at the Golden Globes that year.
Yeah.
I mean, those things are so great when they happen, and unfortunately they don't happen enough.
Right. Yeah.
Have we gotten Julia Roberts' Suck It story yet? Has that been?
Yeah. I feel like, I think she said that it was some conversation that they had had very recently and that she wouldn't elaborate further. She wanted to keep that as an inside joke between them.
Good yeah, it was like at the bar behind, like at the Oscars or something.
Mm. Oh, right. That's right. It was at the bar that night. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I also kind of keep in my head, I keep imagining that Sally Hawkins was with them because of that weird edit where they tried to go to Sally Hawkins and then it went black and then it was June Squibb.
Oh, no.
That was so weird during supporting actress.
I have to say, though, like, in terms of production, like, cannot be easy to pull off a live show like that. And, like, with few mistakes, I, at some point in the last week or so, somehow ended up in a YouTube hole of Tony Awards clips. And some of those 1990s Tony Awards ceremonies were so poorly produced, just in terms of, like, they would read a they would read, like, Deborah Monk's name, and they would cut to somebody who's, like, not so much not Deborah Monk that it's, like, a young African American woman. And then when she won, they still cut back to that same not Deborah Monk as, like, her legs walked past this woman across the aisle. Like, it was. And that would happen a lot. Like, that was not an isolated incident.
And, so,
like,
and yeah, the Tony Awards are the ones that always win
the Emmys,
yeah.
And those ceremonies have improved.
Well, I think they pulled themselves together after years in the wilderness.
They did. but so, like, kudos to good production values, or at least not disastrous ones. I think I'm with Nick that I would absolutely standing over for Pharrell. Like, that was phenomenal and so much fun. And, like, just, again, like, even before Ellen did the pizza stuff and the selfie stuff, like, go into the audience and get people to, like, have fun with you. Like, that's so great. Like, did he seem a little bit like one of those wedding entertainers who, like, gets grandma to get up and, like, dance with him? A little bit, but, like, that's great. That's
the Oscars
also had
that.
Lupita, like, hustled up to the front row because she was so damn excited. Yes. That's a good sign. Yeah.
Absolutely. There's no way I don't standing O for Lupita winning. Like, that was the moment I thought that really, I think if that that award goes differently, the entire rest of the night goes differently. I think the mood in the room totally, like, maybe crashes. Mm-hmm. because like everybody was like on pins and needles and really wanted that to happen. And I feel like I'm only projecting a little bit when I say that.
I don't think anyone was happier than Jennifer Lawrence as he looked.
Absolutely. Around. And I was so happy for Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh God. Yeah.
It's great. It was just like, I was happy for the world at that moment. It was so, like, I could not have had a bigger smile on my face. And then Lubezki's a good idea, Nick. Like that, I had 12 Years a Slave as my third for Best Picture because, like, that was another one where I was just like, I did not know what way it was going to go, and it would have been a standing ovation of relief more than anything. But Lubezki's career really does deserve it, doesn't it? So maybe a tie. I'm going to break the rules. I'm going to say a tie. Sorry, Nathaniel.
You know, there was a tie last year. It's fine. Mark Wahlberg is stunned by your tie.
Mark Wahlberg is still stunned.
How about you, Katie?
I probably reserve one for Spike Jones because he does such amazing work, and he kind of deserved an Oscar at some point. I really loved Her, and I'm glad. Like, I think
cutie, my God.
I know. And at the last minute, I think I chickened out and predicted American Hustle for that screenplay win, and I'm just really glad it went to something that's original and, you know, well thought out.
And then he talked to his friends who are invisible.
Yeah, he's a charmer, and he's so good in The Wolf of Wall Street. Like, what a good year to be Spike Jones. I would have picked Lubezki, but because you did, Nick, I'll just say Cuarón for Best Director. 12 Years a Slave was still my pick of those movies, but I mean, Cuarón has this unimpeachable career. I mean, not unimpeachable, but, you know, Children of Men was a masterpiece that nobody cared about at the time. And Gravity was this incredible labor of love, and I was just psyched to see him win something for that. And then my third one would be some kind of slight log rolling for myself, but I did these interviews with the Best Makeup and Hairstyling nominees, and the one for Dallas Buyers Club was where that story about the $250 makeup budget came from. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited to see that story go all over the place. I've never seen anything quite like that happen. And then it came out in the middle of voting. So not that I deserve any credit for this, but I was very happy to see them win that. So good for Robin Matthews and Adrutha Lee, who I did not actually talk to, but I talked to Robin Matthews. So, yeah, good for them for making magic.
I'm actually going to stick with Kevin and say I think you might deserve credit for that. Like, even the Hollywood Reporter, those, like, you know, anonymous, brutally honest voters or whatever that they were asking who they were voting for, like, a couple of those mentioned the budget.
Did they really?
Yeah. Like, I actually was like, Derek, I think my friend got these people an Oscar. Hey.
Well, I demand them to send me a little mini Oscar to put on my shelf for having
you could get one of those old juvenile Oscars that they used to hand out.
I'm sure they've got some extras sticking around in the back stock.
Do they still have that mold somewhere in the back room?
Well, and it definitely 1,000% changed the way that I thought about that nomination. And not just that nomination, but just thinking about this whole business of judging this stuff, of like having to like really think about the realities of what a lot of these people are dealing with, even when they have big budgets. Like, it was just such a perfect story about putting things in different kinds of contexts than just the race.
And seeing something win, like, you know, because so many of these technical categories win for most rather than best. And that, I mean, obviously the other nominees in the category were kind of tough for people to vote for, which made it a front runner from the beginning. But it is, you know, it's doing so much with so little that makes it so interesting.
Yeah.
And you know what that story reminded me of, actually, was, you guys remember in 1994, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
Yep.
They had a tiny budget for costumes somehow.
Yeah.
And yet the things that they turned out, and I think that really helped them win that year, too, because people were aware that they had no budget.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those stories are always fascinating. Okay, so mine, I'm going to also go with Kate, the world is round, people, which I hope people quote forever. But I should have started my first standing ovation as for the stick man for not ever interrupting anyone. It was so great. That's the whole point of award shows, is the speeches.
Yeah.
And my third is going to go to Amy Adams, because her moment when she got up and danced.
Yep.
You guys should watch this again if you haven't, like, slow-mo'd everything from the Happy performance. But the way she, like, jumps up, does her little slinky dance, and then sits back down, and when she sits back down, she kicks, like, one leg over and, like, settles into her chair like I'm a diva.
Yeah.
It was so funny. It reminded me of, like, a sort of, like, a girl you think of as this meek girl actually turning out to be, like, the sort of superstar.
Yeah.
Of her class, like a theater girl who becomes the most popular girl in school.
It was for She's All That moment. It was great.
I have not felt that much love for Amy Adams since Junebug.
Can we all just collectively, like, say a little prayer that her next performance is really fantastic? Because her next nomination, she's winning, right? I feel like we can all
maybe
agree on that one.
Maybe, but if they... But
as Glenn Close doesn't agree with you about that.
As we've discovered many times, if they don't catch you in your moment, they lose interest.
I guess. I don't know. I just feel like there's such momentum, I guess.
Well, maybe. I'm just happy because last year when she got nominated for The Master, I felt like a lot of the reaction was like, whoa, 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 this is not the right performer to have four nominations so quickly. And there were even a lot of commenters, you know, I think even here saying, like, she'll probably never get nominated again, or, like, we really have to, this can't go on, this madness. And, like, I think it's so great that, like, she managed to get nominated again the very next year and has endeared herself so much to so many people. And
yeah,
I think
like,
established her range.
I think the performance in Hustle and then the speech at the Golden Globes kind of pulled things together for her in terms of just like giving her a kind of respect.
And I think her really helps too.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, totally. I don't know. I really, really hope she does win an Oscar. And I hope that it's not for, you know, her version of The Reader that makes everybody hate her again.
Oh, God.
Amy Adams in The Reader would be hilarious.
Especially if she does that dance.
Reboot.
Yeah.
I don't know what her next thing is. Like, Joe, do you know what...
Big Eyes. Tim Burton.
Okay. Woo! Okay.
But and then aren't they still trying with the Janis Joplin thing, too, after that?
But is that really going to happen?
Directed by Lee Daniels?
Yeah, I feel like every time we hear about that, it changes whether or not it's happening.
Yeah, even sometimes when it's in production.
Yeah.
Like the Zooey Deschanel one that was filming and whatever.
Although you'd think after The Butler that Lee Daniels would be able to get it made.
Yeah. Was that going to be his next thing? It was.
Yeah, and that was a huge hit. So you'd think that he would have the power to get it made. And especially since Amy Adams is so popular. But
Yeah. All right, Joe, I now share your concerns. Being aware of the Janis Joplin, Lee Daniels biopic, I'm now also concerned about whatever her next thing is.
I just want Big Eyes to be good.
It might be.
I do too. It's just been a really long time for Kevin Spacey, for Tim Burton. What a weird flub.
Adele Dazeem.
I know, I'm John Travolta. So, should we do reader questions?
Sure.
Yeah, they were really
good.
Not
questions about the reader, but questions.
I have so many questions about the reader.
Don't we all? Well, I guess I'll take Joey's question, because what a great name. Was there a win that takes away your disappointment of something not getting nominated?
I think that's an interesting question because it brings to mind the feeling of inevitability that settles in with Oscar nominations, where you can only be talking about who was omitted from the categories for so long, and then it starts to feel like, no, this was always who it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time you get to the show, I actually... rarely am still upset about those things. Later on in history, you know, we still bitch about them. But when it comes to Oscar night, I've sort of adjusted by then. Unless it's something terrible, like, you know, 2003, where you just, like, hate a lot of the categories, you know? Or who they're picking to win. So I wasn't really thinking about that, and I thought it was a good crop of winners.
I guess for me, it's sort of like a reverse bell curve. Like, I started off really complaining about who didn't get nominated, and then Oscar night comes, and it's just, and the moment of the winner, it's really lovely. And, you know, Cate Blanchett won. How could I complain about all the great actresses who weren't nominated when we get this great moment? And then, like, give me a couple months, and then I'll remember again how 2013 was the year that Greta Gerwig and Brie Larson and Julia Louis-Dreyfus were all passed over for... I don't even know. Who's my token terrible nominee in this category?
Meryl Streep.
No, I actually loved Meryl Streep in that movie.
Okay, good. I did too.
I guess maybe...
Although I would swap her out for either of those people.
I would probably swap Dench out, even though, like, it's... You can't hate Judi Dench. Like, I can't be like, grr, Judi Dench about anything.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I originally thought, you know, that category was frustrating given all the performers that were really good this year, but that clip that they showed of Judi Dench...
That's the best one.
Yeah.
Oh my God, she's so good at the finale of that movie.
Yeah. It's impossible to really begrudge that too much. And actually, I feel like that movie has improved a little bit in my memory too, particularly the script of it. which the better moments tend to linger, and the ones that I was dissatisfied by take a little bit longer to remember why.
Yeah. I remember being happy on nomination day that I thought they just did a basically really good job this year. Like, Sean Bobbitt was the only thing that I even, like, lingered with me for a little while. But, and even leading up to the awards, I went back to see a lot of the movies again in the theater. And even nominations that had not been my favorites, like the Christian Bale or the Bruce Dern, like, I continued to like things better the second time and see more stuff and things that I maybe had been a little cool to. So I'm pretty happy with what they did this year.
My one big sore point was just Inside Llewyn Davis being left out to the extent that it was and not being an Oscar movie and all of those things. But really the only thing that I was thinking about that makes up for it is the Emmanuel Lubezki cinematography win, and Llewyn Davis was actually nominated for cinematography, so it doesn't quite match up. But I was, you know, I was thinking like that would be the spot that they could reward it, but the winner for cinematography was kind of hard to argue with, so it worked out. Maybe sound mixing should have happened. But again, Gravity, like, it's a huge technical achievement. You can't really argue with it.
Who wants to take the next question?
I'll take Carmen, because I have strong feelings about it. Carmen asks, if you could join in on Ellen's one selfie to rule them all, whose spot would you take? Alternatively, if you could swap anyone from the selfie, who would be included and who would be ousted?
Oh, here we go. Let's
okay. I have strong feelings that if you are not a famous person, you are not invited unless explicitly asked. Therefore, Peter Nyong'o, as much as it took serious chutzpah to put yourself in that selfie, you did not belong there, you were not asked, and I think it's a way of shoving yourself in a place where you don't belong that I wouldn't have done it. I don't think it's good manners. So, Peter Nyong'o, good for you for being bold. I hope you get into every restaurant in Los Angeles for the rest of your life. But yeah, step aside. You blocked Angelina. You can't do that. And Lupita's not even in it that much. Like, he's front and center and Lupita's way in the back. Like, that, come on.
I feel like wanting to shove aside Peter Nyong'o so that you can get a better look at Angelina Jolie is the most gay male you've ever seen in your life, Katie.
I feel like it should be everyone's universal human instinct.
I would replace Kevin Spacey because, like, I know he loves himself very much, but he could have lifted up Liza, who was trying to lift herself up. Oh, he could have been her. He could have been her stool to pick her up, and so she could have been in the back of the photo.
I would not trade that image from the back of Liza, straining to be seen for anything.
Oh, God.
It's so funny. It's so Lucille too. It's such a Lucille too kind of moment. It's great.
What is Lucille too?
Oh, that's Arrested Development.
Oh,
reference.
I'm so backwards.
She is super funny on that show.
Nathaniel, you only want to get rid of Kevin Spacey because he's television and not movies now.
Well, I've never liked, but I've never liked Kevin Spacey.
No, I know.
And I want to replace him with Kathy Baker.
I would actually probably either get rid of Spacey or, honestly, Jared Leto, because he booked it from down the aisle to horn in. I mean, I know getting on Peter Nyong'o's case for hopping across, like, 2 feet, but, like, Jared Leto really kind of ran down to, like, get his face in on something.
I kind of love that, though, because I thought that he was going to be too cool for school with all this Oscar.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm like, I can't be bothered to wash my hair. I'm in a band. Like, but he's so psyched. Like, the whole, even at all the sort of pictures of the after parties and stuff, I thought Cate Blanchett also looked way more excited to win than she was last time. And
you know who was too cool for anything? Katie, plug your ears. It was Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, he did not want to be involved in anything. He begrudgingly took a slice of pizza. Like, I don't know how anybody does that. How does anybody begrudgingly take a slice of pizza? Like, that's humanly impossible to do.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he and Charlize can just go have a conversation about how terrible everything is. I'm a little over the resting facial expressions in both cases.
But also, Sandra was in a mood, right?
Oh, whoa, Joe.
Don't we think, though?
Does anybody hear anything? I can't hear anything on my head.
I thought she was... I love that moment that I had missed the first time through, where Ellen surprised her from behind, and started laughing. I love that moment.
Okay, I don't know. I thought there were a lot of cutaways of her looking, like, bothered by something.
Oh, I thought she was just like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. That's maybe... maybe I'm projecting onto her what I thought Jennifer Garner should have been feeling, being left there all alone without a husband.
Yeah, what the hell is that about?
He joined her for the after party.
I know, but what is up with that? Like, what's
I know!
And what's been up with Ben Affleck all Oscar season?
Well, what was up with his speech last year about her?
I'm saying, hey,
I support that speech still. Things,
but I have to. Like, I'm concerned for my friend is what I'm saying.
I think Jennifer Garner should be mad that the movie she was in wound up taking off, and yet her part in it still sucked, and it wasn't.
Yeah, it did.
I do think that when we claim to be friends with Jennifer Garner, we have to bow down once again to Derek.
Yeah, who is that?
He's just let that train run out of the station so many times. I don't even know what to say. That's a whole chapter of the memoir at this point.
Did he have any feelings about her on the night?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say that either one of us was totally taken with the garnering that we observed in Dallas Buyers Club. It's been a rough year to be a garnerite, but, you know, he's always happy to see her. I'll say that. He liked her hair.
Mm-hmm. She always has good hair.
Yeah.
One year she had bangs, but let's not talk about it.
So, Nick, you want to take another question?
Oh, sure. I'll take Archon's... Archon? I always wonder. Archon? Archon?
I say Archon. Hopefully that's right.
The Wrath of Archon asks, pair one nominated actor and one nominated actress, any categories, with one Oscar-nominated director in their next film. In their next film is actually what it says, but I'm going to go with next film.
I'm going to go first on this, just because I have a really weird answer, because I often wish both of these people would just take 1 year off just to rejuvenate their creative batteries. But I, for whatever reason, the second the question was asked, I desperately wanted to see Meryl Streep and Leonardo DiCaprio together.
Whoa.
Directed by
Marvin's
Room Reunion, directed by David O. Russell, because Meryl does not work with enough directors who are actually good directors, and Leo needs to be shaken a little bit.
Yeah.
To get interesting stuff out of him. And I think David O. Russell could maybe find things in them that other people can't, just because his style is so very different than people that they work with. That's my answer.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I went with also an actor who maybe could do with a year off, Jennifer Lawrence, and Jared Leto, who I want to see what other people saw in him in Dallas Buyers Club. So I feel like maybe putting those two together as perhaps siblings in like an Alexander Payne movie where they are dealing with like the loss of a parent or the loss of parents or something in that sort of Alexander Payne wheelhouse. I feel like it would be interesting for him as much as it would be interesting for the two of them, because like she's such a big personality and she could probably stand to be in something a little bit more downbeat. And I would like to see I feel like Jared Leto bouncing off of her would be pretty interesting.
I want to see that movie too.
I also was thinking about Jared Leto, and I want to see him and Lupita take advantage of what's apparently award season chemistry. Like, I don't know if they're actually dating, but they seem to like each other a lot. And I mean, I think
he and June Squibb also have white
hair. Yeah, that's true. They have there's a strong rumors about them too. And basically, I really want Lupita to just do something totally different next. Like, please let her revive the rom-com with whoever so chooses. But I feel like of this crop, the best person to do it with would be her and Jared Leto, directed by David O. Russell. Somehow make that a rom-com. Like, give them their Silver Linings Playbook. Matthew McConaughey, also an acceptable answer. And I'm kind of curious to see her and Michael Fassbender reteam in something, but I think that might break everybody's brains if they were having a romance together. It might be
that would be hard. Yeah.
It would be a little rough. As much as I think they could both do it amazingly well.
Well, my cheating answer, which was two actresses, obviously, was
right. I think that was all of our cheating answers.
Would have involved Sally Hawkins and Julia Roberts in a David O. Russell movie, just because. I think Julia is just so fun when she gets to be fun. And Sally Hawkins, who also I bet I'd love to see happen to her through David O. Russell, what happened for Amy Adams, of just total anti-typecasting. And she just seems like she just needs to take it down one level and just embrace the fame and be okay. Like, I worry for Sally Hawkins, especially watching her, like, try to kind of wear Cate Blanchett's outfit in both of the awards over the weekend. It really seems slightly lost. So, I think David O. Russell might shake her up in a productive way. But then my actual answer was similar to Nathaniel's in terms of seeing people work. I want to see Meryl Streep work with Steve McQueen, I think.
Yeah.
I thought Christian Bale might also be a good match for Steve McQueen, because clearly you need some fortitude to go up against whatever Steve McQueen is serving. But
serving, I like fake clap realness is what he's serving.
That's right.
He's serving what? I'm sorry.
Fake clap realness.
Oh.
Oh God. That might be the best thing to emerge from the entire
of all time.
I think it might be the best thing that came from these Oscars.
I was using that one for a while.
But I don't want to see Christian Bale with too many more Scott Coopers who are intimidated to direct him. I think he's really good in a lot of those movies, but it's more interesting to watch him be with a director who's as hard-charging as he is, and that would seem to fit the bill. And the point for Meryl, actually Judi Dench with Steve McQueen would be pretty phenomenal also.
These are all great ideas.
Yeah. Steve McQueen has yet to make a movie about a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but he hasn't made very many movies. So
well, the world is round, people.
We don't know what he's doing.
Gets Scorsese to make another Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Ooh, yeah.
Because he seems incapable at this point.
He does seem incapable of it at this point. I agree.
It would be 3 hours long, and it would feature digital zooms for a reason I can't imagine.
Okay, I'll take the final.
Alice doesn't live here, or here, or here, or here.
All the places that Alice doesn't live anymore.
Not even here anymore.
And Jonah Hill's in all of those places.
Yeah, it would have to be Alex doesn't live here anymore if it was remade.
That's
sad. I'll take the last question. Benji says, do we think the winners won for the right films, or is there something else in the filmography you think was more deserving?
I suspect Katie and I have a similar answer.
I suspect maybe we all have.
I was going to say, I feel like all of our answer is going to be the exact same. We could all say it at the same time.
We could. 3, 2, 1. McConaughey Magic Mike.
I thought we were going to say Ladies of Tampa, so I fucked it up.
But I was thinking Alfonso Cuarón for Children of Men, but I think an even better answer. So, yeah, Ladies of Tampa. It is... I mean, I guess it makes more sense for McConaughey to have a leading actor Oscar because he is a leading actor and that's been his entire career. So the supporting thing would have been strange.
Sure. Yeah.
Doesn't this seem like a more classic Oscar win? Like,
oh, for sure.
The story makes more sense for him to win for this than it would have for Magic Mike.
Although part of what I love about his trajectory has been that he's the back of this whole thing has been kind of non-focus pulling parts. Like, he's been captivating in them, but even in Mud, where he's not even really the lead in that. Like, So a supporting trophy might have been pretty cool, but yeah, whatever.
Look,
I hope that inspires more people to be like, literally anyone can turn things around in a profound...
Yeah. Well, and doesn't it make you just wait for DiCaprio? I mean, I guess Django Unchained was kind of supposed to be that, and that didn't pan out, but like, for him to take those kind of weird supporting parts that like let us see him in a different light.
Can we talk about his speech for like half a second?
Oh man.
Do we have to?
Well, I just
if it's half a second, sure.
Like what? I like his speeches all season hadn't been great, but like neither had Jared Leto's and he pulled it together.
Yeah.
And I just feel like McConaughey just kept doubling down on this idea of himself as a myth. And a legend, and like a inspirational tale, and like does.
I think it's the problem of mythology building within a film year when everything becomes about four people.
Yeah, I guess when your name is turned into a classic period of the world, as the Renaissance could become, like maybe that plays into it. Sure.
I mean, it's an actor buying into his own hype, which, film at 11, who's surprised by this, but it is...
But usually people have more shame about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know what I found interesting about him getting, obviously, the crown for the McConaissance? Is also thinking about Kate's speech and her little thing at the very end about how the time that she left the movies made her a better actor.
When was it?
When she was talking about working with the Sydney Theater Company, that time period where she was suddenly not ubiquitous in Hollywood. And I thought in both cases, that's a really interesting moment in their career where they both reassessed.
Yeah.
And then got these great roles and these great rewards and did great work. I mean, I think it's sort of a amazing message to send out there into the world. But yeah, he wasn't sending it well at the end.
My feeling is that the reign of the stylists has made it impossible for people to show up in biker shorts with trains attached to them or like one-sleeved Kim Basinger gowns. So like the speech is where we find out how fucking weird these people might actually be. And like, I don't know that Matthew McConaughey would have given a different speech 5 years ago pre-McConaissance. Like, I think we just saw the medium rare cut of that dude.
Yeah.
I was, you know,
yeah. Yeah, this is still kind of like Naked Bongo playing McConaughey. Like,
yeah.
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 Naked Bongo player doesn't go away. The Naked Bongo player abides.
It's a relief to me that True Detective remains on the air to kind of, because I feel like it would be easy to look at that and be like, oh, well, whatever, Dallas Buyers Club. I mean, Dallas Buyers Club, not spectacular. It'd be kind of easy to try to take away the McConaughey. But he's still really great on True Detective. Like, I'm glad that talent is still there, even if he's a doof.
And he's great in Wolf of Wall Street. And
yeah.
He's really good in Mud. Like, he deserves the praise. He just maybe shouldn't be praising himself is the point.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for all coming back for one last look at the 2013 Oscars.
I never got a chance to say that I thought the real Philomena Lee should have been in the selfie. That's who I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be Channing
Tatum. They were stuck in the balcony together, Philomena and Captain Phillips.
And Harvey Weinstein could have just like catapulted her with one big arm and just flung her into the selfie.
Oh, my favorite after Oscars takeaway was definitely Jennifer Lawrence's bestie's little recount of her Oscar experience.
Oh, I haven't read that yet, but I heard.
Oh, it is so funny, and she you totally understand why they're best friends because yeah.
Where is it?
It's on MySpace.
It's on MySpace, Dick. Why aren't you on MySpace?
I found it weird that she wrote that whole thing without naming her best friend. She kept being like, my best friend and I. Like, I didn't get that gimmick.
Oh, I thought it was fun. Because she only ever called her Miss J or my friend.
Yeah.
So.
Boy, that's MySpace through and through, isn't it?
Yeah, but also, my favorite line was, like, her talking about, like, I just tried to, you know, stay in the background and except for when the celebrities caught me staring creepily. Shout out to Penelope Cruz.
Although, how was that girl her date? And then Nicholas Hoult showed up in the audience.
Well, she brought three people. So
you can do that?
Yeah, if you're Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
So she brought three people, but because of like the seating and the camera stuff, they obviously don't want three. The two people that nobody would recognize in the front row.
Three dead seats. You can say it, Nathaniel. It's fine.
So that's why Nicholas Hoult was with her, but her dad and her best friend were elsewhere in the auditorium.
All right. I would accept that.
What did Bruce Dern write on his MySpace page?
Oh, but anyway, so at the end of the article, she gave out awards, and most Hollywood was Harvey Weinstein, who was introduced to her, and he said, you know my name.
Oh, wow.
I'd almost be
sure that wasn't Sasha Stone.
Like that.
Or you know who I am or something.
What
like
I do for a living. Yeah, whatever.
Low six figures. I'm just
Oh god.
A drag name if ever there was one.
Low six figures.
And Nathaniel, you dropped it a second ago, but thank you for your tireless work on behalf of naming the Oscars after the correct years.
I try.
A Lifetime Achievement Award in that field to you.
The Gene Herschelt.
It's become a problem, is what I would say. It's become an epidemic.
I worry you guys are on the wrong side of history on this. Not that you're not correct, but that history is going to leave you behind.
I will die on this hill.
I'm already dead on the hill. I'm like a ghost. I'm like a Civil War reenactment.
I tried so hard with all the editors of those papers that I got to write stuff for, and like they just weren't. They weren't feeling it.
I was at a trivia on Wednesday, and the question was what year did Halle Berry win her Oscar for? And even like specified the year of the movie, and they still at the end said 2002, and a committed band of correct people in the audience had to step down. Kat Kiernan on the stage and be like, no!
Joe is taking this to the streets.
That's where it belongs.
I mean, the thing is, I get the problem. Like, I get why people do it. But it only works in that moment.
It's only
but like a month later, it doesn't work again.
It's only for SEO. It makes no other sense.
Yeah.
Right, because like a few months from now, we're talking about 2014 movies and who's going to be nominated. But then if you call it that, then that means those Oscars already took place.
Right.
Right. Correct.
So it only works that week to call it by the wrong name.
International court in the Netherlands. Make it happen.
Oy. Okay, well, thanks you everyone for joining
us. This is like our season finale, right?
It is.
Oh, wow.
Does everyone have their thank you speeches prepared? I don't, so I hope the rest of you do.
So I have to thank all of you for being so faithful participants. And thank the readers for listening and being so engaged with the podcast. We love the comments. Kate and Amy, I don't know if you guys saw this report, but Kate and Amy actually went to a tattoo parlor after the Oscars.
Yeah.
So what did you do? You probably didn't get a tattoo, but what did you do?
I taught a graduate seminar the next day in which I invoked both Lupita Nyong'o's speech and Adele Dazeem.
Oh my God.
Things go, even when I'm teaching queer theory to PhD students. Like, we have things to talk about.
You found a way to work it into your pre-prepared notes.
And I promised them I really am going to listen to you when you talk today and not just replay Kate's speech in the back of my mind, which is sort of there even when I'm looking at you. But
it'll be there with you for the rest of your life. It's something you'll get used to.
It's true.
Is it lame to just say that I slept?
Did you sleep?
Because my God, did I. Yeah, I decided I was going to sleep. I left a lot of stuff to the next morning, and I know it's sort of like whatever made me late on a couple things. But the next morning I was busy ranting about the 2013 versus 2014 thing. So ultimately, I feel like that good night's sleep paid off.
Mm-hmm. I went into the office that I had left like 7 hours earlier, and continued to work, but then posted the story, this great story that this guy wrote about why Leonardo DiCaprio didn't win, that Facebook went nuts over, because apparently the entire internet was very concerned about Leonardo DiCaprio's feelings, which I did not expect.
I expected that.
He's just too cool of a guy.
You know what? Did you read the piece, Joe?
I did read the piece.
Okay. I feel like you saw that you were like, it's going to drive me crazy.
Well, the headline was designed to make people like me crazy, so well done there.
I'm trolling you so hard. Nathaniel, what did you do?
I also went to bed. I momentarily thought about staying up all night so that I wouldn't be days behind on the writing. But I was just so, like, worked up that I only had a choice of, like, being crazy and not actually getting anything written or going to sleep. Just because the Oscars really, like, excite me. I don't know if you know this about me.
What?
So I had to really, in order to even process anything, I had to sleep. Although one of these years, if I could manage it, it would be really great to be able to have everything written that night, because people expect that speed on the internet now.
It is it's hard to do, even if you have other people working with you, which I know you were envying at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... Yeah, the only way really to do it with the speed people want is to be, like, to have a team and be like, you take this topic, and then you have to miss the rest of the Oscars while you write your article, you know, in order for them to all be ready right after.
But people come to you for what you got, so, you know, they'll wait.
That's true. But I just think that that's the way to do it. Like, you assign someone in your team gets June Squibb, like, write an article.
Who might have been best dressed. Can I, having been not so charitable to her all season, can I just say, she looked great.
Wow. This is, like, a moment.
This just proves that there could be no more war. Everyone can get along.
This proves that you weren't lying on Twitter when you said you love everyone.
I actually love everybody. It's true.
That's such a good note to end the season on.
Yes. Yeah, we love everyone.
We do.
And happy Oscars 2013. And we'll be back for more for talking about what might be nominated in 2014.
Monuments
or even just the movies.
And the movies, of course. We did a really good job of focusing on the movies this year, I think.
Yeah.
Rather than just the Oscars.
And my hero is us. Is us all year. Every month this year.
My hero is us in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We predicted all the Oscars for 2020.
When the 2019 Oscars will be held. That's right.
Yeah. Everyone get it right now.
All right.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye, buddy.
And perhaps those of us in the industry who are still foolishly clinging to the idea that that female films with women at the center are niche experiences, they are not. Audiences want to see them, and in fact, they earn money. So...